Our cultural stereotype of Italy is one of audacious style, fast sports cars, and fresh rustic food. But it was also an early home to progressive designers and futurists, trained at pioneering places like the Interaction Design Institute Ivrea and Domus Academy. One of the early participants in this scene is this week's guest, designer Leandro Agro. This episode is going to be not just about artificial intelligence, or AI, but a broader range of emerging technologies, introducing us to things such as, if you can believe this, edible batteries. I'm Dirk Niemeyer, a social futurist interested in systems that will make the quality of our lives better. My co-host is Jonathan Follett, a writer, composer, and emerging tech researcher. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 3 of Creative Next, a show about future-proofing creatives in a world of AI automation. This episode is about emerging technologies that will impact applications of AI automation and features designer Leandro Agro. Let's get started. Like people, technologies have distinct stages in their lives. The ideas that culminate in a technology are like the pre-life, lots of eggs and sperm floating about that only become life if they connect and develop in the proper way. At the opposite end of the spectrum are dead technologies, things like dial-up modems, 8-track tapes, and tube televisions. Even if there are still examples of them hanging about, they have been obsoleted by other technologies. While, unlike us, they could be brought back to life, there really wouldn't be a point. They had their time and served their purpose and now are, for all practical purposes, gone forever. One of the life stages for a technology is emerging, as reflected in the popular phrase, emerging technologies. Being an emerging technology is the teen or young adult years where a technology exists and has obvious potential, but is not completely developed and could ultimately have impacts ranging from negligible to paradigmatic. But in this moment, they matter. They are part of a lattice of technologies that will collectively drive our futures. All technologies were, at one point, emerging. Electricity, the printing press, the wheel. Once emerging technologies, they are now part of a pantheon of world-changing technologies that, immortally, still run riot today. While artificial intelligence is at the heart of many of the things we're going to talk about on Creative Next, it is hardly the only one that is germane to our professional futures. In fact, AI is one of a handful of technologies we've come to call smartware. These smartware technologies, collectively, will transition us from a static world enhanced by a small number of limited digital devices into a dynamic world where the physical and digital are well integrated. Artificial intelligence will provide the brain, but the Internet of Things will provide the physical infrastructure and data collection grid. Additive fabrication, or 3D printing, will contribute to local, modular, and customized manufacturing. Mixed realities will serve as the platform within which the physical and digital coalesce. And identity graphs will provide the personalization, the interface between each unique person, and the trove of potential these technologies can offer. Of course, fully manifesting this will take decades. Even though the constituent technologies are all emerging at roughly the same time, there are existential barriers such as corporations' selfish drive for profits, a world of existing analog infrastructure that won't retrofit well, and inefficient and visionless governments that will hinder progress. Not to mention the fact that the technologies themselves, in most cases, haven't matured properly yet. All of that is to say nothing of the problem-solving challenges around integration. I can't even get my own personal laptop to talk to my phone and tablet here in 2019. These magical environments remain science fiction for now, but, crucially, the component technologies are in the process of arriving. They aren't theoretical at all. We, everyday and ordinary people, can touch them, use them in a variety of applications. The future isn't here yet, but it sure is close. And particularly if we can make it available to more than just the privileged elite, will prove revolutionary. Last episode, Toby Bassetti took us through the nuts and bolts of AI and machine learning. Our guest this time is an old friend of mine, Leandro Agro. Leander, as he is known to his friends, is an executive digital director with Design Group Italia. He spent his career on the bleeding edge, building products with emerging technologies years or even decades before the market catches up. He is going to curate us through emerging smartware technologies with his characteristically progressive perspective.
In the kind of components that are artificial components that make possible for your body to work better, will force us to build hardware that are so tiny, so able to reduce the energy consumption, so compatible with the body, that hardware is still the center of everything. I recently saw an Italian company making a patent for batteries that you can actually eat. So try to consider this. It is just stunning. You can eat the batteries.
I bet you weren't familiar with edible batteries. Or maybe you were, in which case you and Leander would probably make good friends. Unlike most of our guests, Leander professionally focuses on a wide array of emerging technologies, not just AI. Part of this he attributes to the nature of impact AI typically has.
It's very curious that AI was like eating the most boring part of many different professions.
That's a good observation, and a telling point on how AI will typically impact creatives. The most boring parts of our jobs, the ones with the least complex thought and problem solving, will be the first things to be automated. Historically, artificial intelligence follows a cycle where a burst of progress and excitement lead to a flow of investment and attention, followed by an ebb where a lack of additional success makes AI fade into the background again. These down periods are referred to as AI winters. Today, with the enormous hype around AI, much of it sci-fi rubbish out of touch with reality, experts rightfully wonder if another AI winter might be coming in the years ahead. Leandro doesn't think so, and his explanation gives some insight into the general state of AI today.
We know that AI already passed a couple of different winters, and it is normal to predict maybe another winter in front of us, just because the high-pressure media, it is making promises and also showing it has some ghost about, I don't know, all the terrible movies about how AI will destroy the universe. So in this moment, probably the most natural thing is to perceive another winter that is coming. However, this season is actually different to me. Respect any previous AI tentative to take the center of the innovation machine. Let me say why I believe this season might be different. First of all, we have better algorithms. They are starting to evolve themselves in some time in a very unpredictable way. So better algorithms, it is part of why this season might be different. Because in this moment, machines are helping humans to be better in creating algorithms. The second reason why this season might be different is because this time we have tons of data. It is the first time ever that we have tons of data. This situation might help specific problematics or making AI very effective in specific fields. Might be considered not enough, maybe. We will not have the general artificial intelligence, but might save life. Might change the way in which we produce our goods. Maybe might save the earth from climate change. So those solutions that are very specific and are driven by tons of data are already an answer about why this season might be different, why this time might be not a winter, might be something different for AI. But the third reason, it is to me the one that is more relevant. We were all impressed when in 2016, if I remember, AlphaGo, the Google supercomputer, was able to win versus the human champions of Go. Well, actually, it was a very unfair, let's say, challenge, because we were talking about a single human brain versus like 2,000 CPUs and more than 200 GPUs that were, let's say, the supercomputer called AlphaGo. And you can see exactly this challenge from another perspective, that is the energy consumption. Well, we know that a human brain, it is consumption more or less 20 watts. Well, the supercomputer AlphaGo was consumption like more or less 1 megawatt. So we are talking about numbers like 20 versus 1 million. So this is very, very, very unfair. But this was 2016. And the reason why I feel this time might be different, and this time we might talk finally about a sort of spring for AI, is that humanity is on the way to build a computational power that is compatible with the AlphaGo, with consumptions that are compatible with the one of the human brain. And someone is talking about being two order of magnitude less energy, let's say, demanding than a human brain. So that is the reason why I feel AI might be this time able to impact positively, I hope, the humanity.
A key interest of Leander's is where intelligence lies inside a system. He talks a little about it here.
Where is the intelligence of the system? How you might create a sort of border between what is local and what is remote in cloud. And we are building a series of growing most personal and intimate objects that force us to consider that, for example, the cloud do not have all the answer. My camera should know about who are my friends and where this camera should take the images of my friends in order to recognize them when they arrive to ring the bell, and what the system into the cloud should know about which of my friends is visiting me today. Well, this is the most relevant question in designing IoT object. What is the intelligence of the system? And I think we have a lot of things to learn on this path.
Intelligence. It is essential to being human and definitionally part of artificial intelligence itself. But making AI intelligence actually be smart, which is to say, able to function in sensible and useful ways in our lives, it needs help. Part of that is the computing power and data required to merely power AI. That's where we come back to smartware. Let's hear Leander talk more about all of those, starting with the Internet of Things, which he has been studying even before Bruce Sterling coined the term SPIME way back in 2004.
We can embed this magic into potentially anything. So I see both, let's say, the dream of the IoT as the desire of me as designer to build this magic, but I see also the business opportunity that is behind it. For example, even if the internet appears ubiquitous right now, the number of connected objects or devices that we have, it's still vastly inferior of those which are not connected. So this is the size of the opportunity, because the coming revolution that we have in front of us will raise the necessity of everyday objects that are substituting the one that we already have and that are not connected. We want to make anything possible more intelligent and aware of us, aware of our humanity. And let me say that there is also the other side of the coin, because according to what, for example, Kevin Kelly say in What Technology Wants, in What Technology Wants is What Life Wants, I think in a certain way, being connected is a sort of natural state of mind of any object. It's like a right that they have. The technology as a basic future form of life, it is starting to have some rights, and we want to have a future where the powerful of the object come from the connection, and this power come to us as a human as a superpower. This is something that we do both on business and personal side. On the business side, because placing an object in the pocket, in a car, on a desktop, or anything in the customer homes means to build this personal, bidirectional, always-on communication channel. So it is better than the wildest dream of any advertising. And this is the opportunity that the business will have marrying the Internet of Things promise. But on the other hand, we have this really powerful technology that reconnects us as a human to all the environment that we have around us. You can feel the voice of a tree. You can understand what to do with a specific problem that is around you, starting from the data that you can collect from the field. And well, we should learn to build the better IoT object and technologies, but the potential is just incredible. I prefer to think that there is a way to build the future that we might design that is deeply human. We might start to tell, for example, that each of those objects that we want to have, each of the technology that we want to bring into the market, that should know stories of the past, the way in which they were produced, the way in which we can in the future disassemble it and make value from its part and recycle it and dispose it and things like that. We should be able to design objects and technology that are sentient, how is possible. So every object should know should know something about the world around it through sensors, and at least have a clock and a map. So being aware of where is it and when it was used. But most important for each of these things, it is that every object and technology, to me, must be social. So every object and technology must be able to communicate and share its status, its value across a sort of social networks that is the one that is actually used by the humans in a sort of participation in the social relationship with all the rest. So if this is the background of the questions, everything changed dramatically, because the point is not how we might become more efficient and how our job will change, but how we might become more aware, more human, more connected person to person through technology or through media or through the IoT. In the context in which the question lives, it becomes completely another story.
Leandro brings the vision of a philosopher or poet to the technology. His grasping with sentience, for example, has almost nothing in common with popular conversations around sentience and AI as a specific technology, and is more about the very nature of being. Let's continue as he boils it down into an everyday example.
Today, talking about sentient thing, I might refer, for example, I already mentioned the camera, for example, the one from Nest that is called Nest IQ. There is some local intelligence into this camera. That means that on the field, inside the camera, there is enough electronics to, elaborate the images that are coming and understand if there is some human that is in front of the camera, whatever it is. This local intelligence, it is limited, but is already a sort of sentience. But the object is not yet sentient in the very sense of the word until the camera is not connected with the net. And because the previous history of those that you defined as a familiar or non-familiar, and because in the future the connection with your, Google Photo library, well, at that point the camera could be totally sentient, because the kind of message that will provide to you as a user will not anymore I spot something in front of me, but will be your friend Dirk is arriving at the door of your home. It feels totally different. And to me, it is sentient enough.
Another key smartware technology is mixed reality, the use of software and devices to augment or virtualize our physical reality. This is an exciting technology and one with specific and imminent applications for learning that we will return to in later episodes this season. Leandro shares some of the upcoming applications he finds most interesting.
It is mandatory right now to focus on other technologies, to not push too much for VR as a global solution for everything, because this is not the time to slow our attention about the natural world. We are, at the contrary, in the middle of the worst crisis that the natural world ever had. So VR, it is a fantastic technology that I love to see for gaming entertainment in general, but please do not be too, ambitious in that, because this may be good for that technology, but will not be good for the rest of us. On the other hand, I'm really a big fan of augmented reality. I love the idea to swim in this infinite shed sea of information that might sport from any context, person, object, place. Most of us, for example, involved in the technology and creative industry, I think in a certain way are already cyborgs. We already outsourced part of our memory, the sense of orientation. I can go from A to B without Google Maps. Part of our knowledge and many other things. All those cognitive extensions of ourselves are mostly hidden inside our smartphone. or spread somewhere into the cloud. And all those information are not shareable with the other humans. I think through augmented reality, we might build something that is extremely promising, and it starts from the power to share this hidden information that our completing has in a very compelling way. I like the idea that, try that. Different artists might paint the walls of the way where I walk. I might see the paint of my favorite street art artist, and maybe he never physically went to make this paint. So it is incredible what they can do, let's say, pushing augmented reality to the top. I love the idea to see the unseen communication of any tree, of a river, through augmented reality. And looking forward also the moment in which, through augmented reality, I might travel in time and see the very same place where I'm standing, but living a glimpse of the past. Can you imagine to enter to the Colosseum in Rome and browse the immense history that was written there? Or just live again your past family Christmas, whatever. So I'm a fan of this unfinished timelines of places and knowledge accessible through augmented reality. And again, without leaving behind the natural world, this is dramatically relevant. And of course, all those scenarios that are fabulous at the personal level are scenarios that might provide to us incredible new business opportunities. Maybe the technology is not already there, not 100%, but I bet we'll arrive pretty soon.
Leander's concern about our real, actual world in the context of theoretical virtual worlds is wise. There's a certain depravity in our getting lost in virtual worlds, even as the creation of which is accelerating the ravages of global warming here in the physical world. Speaking of the physical world, let's pivot to talk about additive fabrication, or 3D printing.
Well, as many designers, maybe one of my hidden desires is to build my own home somewhere into the country. And because I'm not able to build it with my hands, probably maybe a fantastic opportunity, the 3D printing technology, because I could just sketch it on a computer and see the real life result in days, let's say. But this dream also, if democratize the access to the architecture, because we might exchange the best design and solution, and also if it's bringing to us incredible opportunity, to me, especially in the fact that you might transform the waste into material buildings, well, the 3D printing is not tackling one of the most complicated things that it's still there on the table. That is this, what I call bricks versus intelligence. Let's assume that a home is not just obviously the bricks that is componing the space and differentiating the space in different room, but is the ability to protect what's inside through an intelligence that is carrying them in many different ways, from comfort to security. This intelligence is not right now printable by any existing systems. So to me, the most relevant part, it is not only, let's say, the dream of the 3D printing on human scale, but is how we might create a situation in which all the intelligence that is also made by cables, is made by, let's say, light switch that is usually in a home, may be conceived from scratch, become modular. How is possible, for example, just because Airbnb is famous, to transform in few clicks the living room in a room that I actually rent to a new guest, splitting the intelligence of my system in my house from the intelligence of the new system that I'm isolating to provide services to another human with different habits, with different needs. How is possible to create profiles of the intelligence of the single human needs and also make it portable? I can maybe, if this intelligence is available, in a USB stick, just take the memory of my home with me and plug it in my hotel room. And wow, everything changed. So this is the part that excited me.
The use case of your hotel room responding to your personal settings relates to the identity graph. Today, our digital identity is bifurcated among dozens, if not hundreds, of companies. None of them know us, and we certainly don't have access to or control of the data. Truly portable and useful identity graphing will be transformational in making smartware in general, and AI in particular, behave like magic. But we are sadly years, if not decades, away from that dream being a reality. Speaking of AI,
I'm still positive about the next step of artificial intelligence. In the short term, AI will be operating more in specific application, so I'm still very optimistic. But before or later, also in the most positive scenario, AI will be in some way embedded in our body, will become part of us. So until AI is something that you can actually turn it off, without turning off in the same moment also yourself, I'm still positive and not scared. In the moment in which AI is something that makes us alive, also for healthcare reason, I began to be a little more worried about the scenario that might grow. So this is the part of the question that we like to address as the thing that scared me or worried me. On the other hand, there are many things that are exciting me. And again, I am very positive about the future. And I personally think we never had right now a better moment in life as humanity. And the things that excited me probably more than any other is not a winner right now, is mostly a loser, and our companion robots. Again, because sci-fi was so influencing me, I like to mention, for example, Blade Runner, but not because this very human-like artificial forms of life, but because the home of the inventor of the replicant, and I remember that home that was picked of different kind of intelligence in many shapes that were the companion robots of this genius, probably early attempt, probably he was still in love those attempts, also maybe partially a failure. And those companion robots are on the path of the things that makes the technology more culturally acceptable to us. Try to imagine that tomorrow morning, a stealth startups is ready to introduce in our house an artificial form of life like the one that we saw in Blade Runner. Wow, the cultural shock is so high that regardless of the price and the service and the functionality, I can imagine the fight between those that might accept these as the future and the one that want to kill them. It's already happening with a self-driving car in many U.S. states. We saw Waymo that was 20 or more times in the last days at the center of some accidents where people just want to refuse the self-driving car in their streets. So try to imagine that moment. It's incredible as a shock to have this artificial form of life that can just walk into your house. But what about companion robots that are like toys that are becoming smarter and smarter with forms, sides that are as nice to you, like dolls, like, I don't know, I can imagine for myself a small Chewbacca, something like that. But you want to have this co-pilot that helps you, I don't know, reminding the next meeting or things like that. But very easily, we might embrace those technologies, and those technologies, step by step, might walk us into the future. So I'm excited about companion robots, the loser of the moment, the one that no one is buying. but I see a bright future for that.
Robotics today have incredible utility, but are many decades away from the Blade Runner-like manifestations Leander finds inspiring. And speaking of inspiration, Leander leaves us with one last inspirational bit.
Do you remember Sir Arthur C. Clarke that say, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic? This is a time in which we are living the kind of technology that could build this magic.
Thanks again to designer Leandro Agro. So, John, how did our interview with Leander impact your thinking about the work we're doing with Creative Next?
Yeah, so I really enjoyed your conversation with Leandro for a number of reasons. One was that he talked a lot about AI and customizing sort of the world around us, which is an angle that I'm very aware of, but not always at the forefront of my thinking. So I thought that was important because in certain ways, I feel like more customization is fantastic. Like you talked about how, you know, maybe we would take all of our settings for the physical environment and transport them to other environments as we move through our lives, whether we go to a hotel or an Airbnb or whatever you have. But it also got me to thinking that customization also creates a bubble, like an artificial bubble around ourselves. So I know that when I customize things like, you know, sort of what I'm reading on, say, Facebook, or what I'm, you know, buying on Amazon, or what I'm, whose feeds I'm following on Twitter, I'm shaping my world in such a way that the, you know, I'm leaving certain aspects behind, right? I'm not being exposed to everything. I'm not being, in contact with things that create either friction or maybe, you know, something I dislike for a certain reason. So I worry that smoothing out these rough edges might have some wonderful effects for us, and also might have some deleterious effects. So that was my first response to what Leandro had to say to us.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about that part as well from a little bit different perspective. I mean, as we look at AI automation and the different technologies involved with smartware, the one that is the most, I don't think tenuous is the right word, but the identity graph is one that's part of that story that we've included that isn't really talked about out there. Whereas Internet of Things and 3D printing, like these are buzzwords. Nobody's talking about identity graphing. And it's something that we've identified as part of that, but it's also the one that's sort of the furthest away. It's certainly not coming anytime soon. And as Leander talked about the different applications, just across his insights, a lot of them came down to the identity graph. Like, to really do them and do them well, you've kind of got to have it. So it reminded me how crucial that piece is going to be in the end game, like to really get the most of these technologies writ large, but also automation in particular. It's going to come down to how the technology is interacting with each of us and who we are uniquely. So for me, in terms of our project, that was the thing that I really came away thinking more about here.
Yeah, I mean, just to sort of expand on that, I think we can see the beginnings of that identity graph happening along the lines of precision medicine, you know, in healthcare, or sort of, you know, the seeds of it in the kind of customization that you see with some e-commerce platforms like Amazon, right? So the seeds of it are planted, and in fact, sort of frightening how much data Facebook has on us, right? Or Google, perhaps. So I think the elements are in play and in the public consciousness, but not sort of united as a unique technology, or at least one that people can easily understand and discuss. But I think you're right, Derek. I think that that's a key element for all these emerging technologies.
And what did Leander say that was the biggest surprise or maybe new kernel of knowledge for you?
Yeah, for me, I really enjoyed his analysis of the AlphaGo, the amount of energy requiring, AlphaGo, what AlphaGo required in order to beat the best Go players, right? So he made the statement that it was grossly unfair that AlphaGo had all of these all of this processing power, which was costing, a ton of energy and a ton of processing versus one human mind, right? So this idea that we've evaluated this amazing AI achievement according to certain factors, and we said, oh, okay, well, that's an amazing achievement. But when you look at it from other angles, so yes, we're over that particular hurdle, but at the same time, the energy cost, I mean, the human being is so much more efficient and effective, even though the human being lost at Go. So that was just a nice other way of framing it. And we can frame other things that way as well. And you start to look at those unintended consequences that we're always talking about. And one of those is energy, right? So the use of energy and how much we consume and how good or bad is it for our environment around us. So transportation, right? The internal combustion engine is fantastic and gets us places, but it costs a lot of energy and it costs a lot of, and there's a lot of environmental costs. So framing the progression in AI via, other factors which weren't as complementary, I thought was, sort of an eye-opener for me, and drew together two separate threads for me, which was, when we're evaluating these things and the consequences of them, we need to keep all of that in mind. So I thought that was a great statement.
Yeah, definitely. Although it's more complicated than that too, right? I mean, how are we measuring energy? So if we assume that the best Go player that AlphaGo is defeating is a 50-year-old person, they've lived around 18,000 days in their life, and if they've had 3 square meals a day, how much energy, let's assume they had steak and eggs just every day. So 18,000 meals of steak and eggs, how much energy went into procuring them 18,000 steak and eggs, right? How much energy went into their air conditioning, the heat in their home, all that stuff. So I actually don't know what the real energy cost is, right? I mean, in terms of in this moment, the energy to run this human is teeny compared to running all those servers and GPUs, the machines, but over the life cycle of the machine compared to the life cycle of that Go champion, I don't know, right? I have no idea.
I think once you get outside of the moment, then you could say, well, all the cost to produce the machines, yeah, the silicon, the metal, the electricity, everything over time to get that machine to where it is, the programming hours, maybe you include all the people's work hours to program it. Once you get outside of that moment, it gets a little academic and sort of expansive and interesting, yeah, of course. I do take that point as well. But worthy of further consideration, certainly, and eye opening.
Yeah. But it was interesting, and the thing that surprise. I'll use the word surprise because it's how we sort of framed the question. What surprised me was as he talked about the future and why we won't be heading into another AI winter, and that's something that you and I have talked about before. I think we too believe we won't be heading into another AI winter, but I really admired how Leander rolled that out. Like, he had 4 or 5 points. He had very thoroughly thought through analytically why this is a different moment and why that won't be happening again this time. And I thought that was really, really great.
Yeah, no, that was an impressive explanation as well.
John, what did you learn from Leander that has influenced your life and how you're living today?
Yeah, one thing that sort of impacted me was his statement, and I think he said something like the point is not how we might become more efficient or how necessarily our jobs will change. The point of all this technology and, you know, sort of what's possible for creative next and smartware and et cetera is connecting people more thoroughly. And I thought, aha, that's really interesting and in line with, you know, some of the thoughts that I've been having around, as industries change, as jobs change, as things become, as more things get automated, what's left? What is the purpose, right? Like, why are we doing all this? And that neatly summed it up for me that, you know, it's this person-to-person connection, which I think in our rush to sort of dominate things with technology, I think we lose the person-to-person relationships quite easily. So, I mean, without sort of making this a larger thesis, I do think a lot of push in technology is to push things forward in a way that I find, whether it's for market dominance or just better technology or whatever it is, it's not about connecting people. I mean, sometimes, in some cases, ostensibly that's the purpose, but in the larger role of tech has not come to that conclusion, which is, yeah, it's about connecting people who might not connect. It was the dream of the internet and just got perversely twisted, right? So now you can connect people who are going to punch each other or something. I don't know.
That's a little pessimistic, but I get your
point. Yeah. So that comment from Leandro was for sure.
Yeah, you know what really has stuck with me is how optimistic and excited he is about technology and where we're going. And you know, my mother always talks about her father, my grandfather, and said, you know, every day he got out of bed and said, today's going to be a great day. He came into the day with sort of a positive perspective. And Leander feels the same way to me, where, you know, he's talking about global warming, he's talking about issues and challenges and negative aspects, but instead of lingering on those, instead of letting his disposition be one that is negative or, sort of doomsday prophecy, you know, he's very positive. He really believes in the human spirit. He really believes in where technology can take us in the future, and keeps that positive energy in the things that he says, the things that he does, the spirit that he brings to the world. And I try to be positive. I'm not always, but it's inspiring to hear Leander and see Leander and to try and follow that lead, because I certainly want to. I would like people to see me as someone who brings positivity as well. I think in bringing positivity, you just make the world better. So that's something that definitely has influenced me, and hopefully I can apply more to my life on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, you got to love his positivity. I tend to skew also a little more skeptical, maybe. So mm-hmm. I agree with you that I understand that. And you know, it takes all kinds, right? So, but yeah, we could all bear to be a little bit more positive, I think.
Amen to that. Now, each episode, we're going to finish up with a thing to think about, one question germane to what's been covered on the show today. This episode's thing to think about is, what is an inspiring smartware application you can imagine, and what are the barriers between what is possible today and actually making it a reality? Think about that for yourself and feel free to tweet at us about it at Go Creative Next. Creative Next is sponsored by GoInvo, a design practice dedicated to innovation in healthcare whose clients are as varied as AstraZeneca, 3M Health Information Services, and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Learn more at goinvo.com. We're also sponsored by Design Museum Foundation, a new kind of museum. They believe design can change the world. They're online, nomadic, and focused on making design accessible to everyone. Their mission, bring the transformative power of design everywhere. You can learn about their exhibitions, events, magazine, and more at designmuseumfoundation.org. Our final sponsor is BIF. As a purpose-driven firm, BIF is committed to bringing design strategy where it is needed most, healthcare, education, and public service, to create value for our most vulnerable populations. To learn more and connect, visit them at biff.is, that's biff.is. Please subscribe to Creative Next on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us at Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. You can get in touch with us at the Creative Next website, creativenext.org, or follow us on Twitter at GoCreativeNext. On Medium, we are partnered with Towards Data Science, where we publish an article to extend and build upon each episode. Check out all that Towards Data Science has to offer at towardsdatascience.com. I'm Dirk Niemeyer, whom you can reach at dniemeyer. That's D-K-N-E-M-E-Y-E-R. And my partner in crime is Jonathan Follett, who is at John Follett. That's J-O-N-F-O-L-L-E-T-T. Our guest this episode is Leandro Agro. You can reach him on Twitter at Leander. That's L-E-E-A-N-D-E-R. Tweet to us with questions, comments, topics, guest suggestions, and include the hashtag CreativeNext. And of course, the home base for everything we do is at creativenext.org. We recommend you sign up for our low-volume newsletter there. Here's a clip of what you can expect to hear next time. We'll see you then.
At what point does the divergence between the human's ability and the computer's ability become so great that it becomes a mistake to insert the human into the system?